Welcome to the Menopause Conversations podcast. My name's Angela Council, and I am your host for this podcast. And this is where you learn all about menopause, what is happening to your body, to your hormones, and life in general. Everything is changing, and sometimes it can seem really, really confusing. But this is where the confusion stops right now. This podcast will share with you everything you need to know about how you can navigate your menopause transition with ease. So sit back and enjoy the show. Bye for now. Hello, it's Angela. And just before we start the podcast, I want to let you know about a brand new webinar that I have coming up very shortly called Menopause Demystified, Unraveling Hormonal Changes, Minimizing Symptoms, and Embracing a Vibrant Life. I have created this webinar exclusively for women over the age of 40, which most of my listeners are. And it's been designed to give you really important information and practical tips on how you can navigate your menopause transition with ease and with confidence. Now, during the webinar, what you're going to learn is a deeper understanding on the hormonal changes that are happening to your body. You're going to understand actually how your hormones work. Ideally, you'd learn this when you're a lot younger, but unfortunately, we don't. As women, we don't really understand our hormones, even though they're with us for most of our lives, but there's never a time that it's too late to start learning. So I'm going to share with you how hormones work and the changes that are happening and how that influences the way that you're looking and you're feeling. And when you've got this information, it'll mean that you can make more informed decisions about your health. I'm also going to go through some strategies for reducing some of the common symptoms like hot flashes, joint pain, mood swings, weight gain, and all of that. And the aim will be that you will have a better understanding of how to balance your hormones naturally and get that sense of well-being back again. And you will hopefully really understand that this is a life transition. It's not meant to be a burden, and that menopause is a time when you can take the opportunity to fully unlock the potential of the next stage of your life. So please join me. The date is June 26th and 27th. Now, it's one webinar. I'm running it twice. So it's at 7 p.m. on June 26th, and then I'll be running the same webinar again on June 27th at 7 p.m. So it will be the same webinar, just I'm running it twice. I will be recording the webinar. So if you can't be there on either of those sessions live, please just register and I will send you the recording. Now, suppose you want to know how to register. Just go to my website, angelacouncil.com/menopause_webinar. Go over there, put your details in. You'll get an email back from me saying that you're registered. And then before the webinar starts, I'll send you a link so you'll be able to join me. So I really look forward to sharing this information with me so that you can have a better understanding of exactly what is happening with your hormones as you move through your menopause transition, and most importantly, so that you've got the knowledge to make the best choices for you regarding your health and your stage of life. Bye for now. Hello, and welcome back to this week's episode of Menopause Conversations podcast. My name is Angela Council, your host for the podcast. This week's topic can be a little bit controversial, and we're talking about healthy bones. Osteoporosis, osteopenia, all of these different labels that come as we get older. There's a lot of fear around osteoporosis, the fear of breaking bones. And I know that as, you know, we know that studies have shown us as people, women, men as well, get older, if they have a fall and break their bones, it is actually an indicator for a downhill route to death. We see this quite a lot. I can actually remember recently watching a series that was on Netflix, and it was actually made. It was filmed where not far from where I used to live in New South Wales, and it was a series about elderly people living in a retirement village and they had all these four-year-olds come to play with them. And what we found when you're actually listening to the older people, so many of them were afraid of falling. And this fear of falling, because it within aged care, it is very common that when someone falls, it's almost like the beginning of the end. So there is this big fear around osteoporosis, breaking things, and what that means to ongoing health. But I want to just take a little bit of a step back and talk a little bit about the diagnosis of osteoporosis, or even the measurement of bone density. Now, when it comes to measuring your bone density, and generally it's done using a DEXA scan, and I'll talk about the accuracy of that in a minute, but it's used using a DEXA scan. But the measurements they're using, they have what is known as T-scores and Z-scores. So T-scores are based on what the bone density of a healthy 30-year-old would have. And basically, they're setting that as the standard, that everybody should have the same bone density as a healthy 30-year-old. And they're not taking into account of age. They're not taking into account of ethnicity, the sex, the amount that you move, any of that. They're just looking at what a 30-year-old would be. And if you're 60, you're comparing your T-scores are being compared to the 30-year-old. Now, the Z score basically compares your bone density to people of your own age, your same sex, and your same ethnic background. So Z scores are more logical, but we find that the medical profession quite often is using the T scores. Now, realistically, do you expect at the age of 60 to have the same type of bones of a 30-year-old? I just have to say, realistically, no, you don't expect that. We know that people in their early 30s have their peak bone mass. The bone density actually starts to drop from mid-30s onwards. So peak bone mass occurs with young adults, people around the age of 30. Before that, they're growing their strength, and then they're losing it as they get older. So, it doesn't make sense that we should be comparing 60-year-old bones with 30-year-old bones. So that's the first little bit of contention that comes up, and where we've got to start getting realistic as to exactly what is happening with our bones. Now, then there's this new term, and it's a relatively new term, called osteopenia. Osteopenia, I have so many women who come to me and say, oh, I have been diagnosed with osteopenia. So, and it's kind of like early stage osteoporosis, but is it? So, as I said, when we're getting DEXA scans, basically, if you remember back to, probably high school statistics, there's a bell graph. And what they're looking at is the healthy 30-year-old is sitting right in the middle of the bell graph, right at the very top. And then they look at standard deviations away from that. So osteopenia is 1 to 2 standard deviations away from the middle of the bell curve. And then the further away from the middle, further number of standard deviations, then we get into osteoporosis. But osteopenia is actually not a medical diagnosis. And Dr. L. Joseph Melton, who's from the Mayo Clinic, he was actually part of the group that was actually setting the original World Health Organization, the WHO criteria, in 1992 around osteoporosis. So Dr. Melton is an osteoporosis epidemiologist, and he was actually looking at this. He was looking at these, he's the one looking at all the bell curves and standard deviations and all of that. And what he said was that osteopenia was just meant to indicate the emergence of a problem. He said it had no particular diagnostic or therapeutic significance, and it was just meant to show a huge group of people who look like they might be at risk. So he was looking at a group, and he was trying to set a criteria, and they said, well, these people here, they don't have osteoporosis, but possibly they do have a higher risk. Now, that's now been taken and it's now a diagnosis. And there's another medical expert called Michael McClung, who is the director of Oregon Osteoporosis Center, and he also criticizes this this use of osteopenia as a disease category. And he said, we have medicalized a non-problem. But why have we done that? Well, because if you've been diagnosed as osteopenia, I am sure you have also been recommended to take specific supplements, maybe calcium or a particular drug. There is money to be made in the treatment of osteopenia, when in fact there is actually nothing to treat. It's just saying, hey, you need to be a little bit aware that there is risk factors there. And we, you know, people have different risk factors depending on their genetics, depending on their the food they're eating, their lifestyle, their movement and all of that. So that all impacts the risk factors. But once we, you know, when we, if we look at osteopenia kind of being that, oh, there's a bit of a warning, increased risk, then we get into osteoporosis. And that's where we're actually seeing that there is a loss of bone density. Now, this is very, very common in women as they're coming through menopause. But we also have to be very careful about just thinking it's all about bone density. We have to be looking at the quality of the bone. So bone, from the time we're born, we have osteoclast and osteoblast. Now, one builds bone up and the other one breaks bone down. And this continually happens. But as we get older, the building the bone back up can become a slower process. But our bone is, it's live tissue. It's always being rebuilt. What you see in, you know, in animals, you know, the dead animals that you eat, the chicken bones and things like that, that's dead. But inside you, you've got live tissue. The cells are live and they're continually being broken down, being rebuilt up. But as we get older, as I said, it's only in your early 30s that you get to a kind of peak muscle, peak bone density. It's also when we get our peak muscle mass too. But that's when there's kind of this balance between the building up and the breaking down. And as we get older, we don't build back up as much. So we're still breaking down, but we're not building back up as much. And there's many things that play a role in this. Hormones, yes, play a role, but also nutrition plays a role in this as well. There's quite a few things that play a role in it. Exercise plays a role. Lifestyle plays a role. Your exposure to environmental toxins plays a role. So where there's always this, you know, this fear that as your bone density comes down that you've got a problem, but we do know that there are people, and this has been shown in research, that people with high bone mineral density can also be at risk of fractures if their bones are brittle and weak. Now, let me explain this a little bit. So if we just in everyday terms, we talk about density. Glass is very, very dense. So it's a dense material. And wood is not so dense because it can be porous and, you know, we've got all this. It's like it's not as dense. So, but glass, if glass breaks, it shatters because it's brittle and it can be weak, even though it's dense. Yet wood is not as easy to break. So it's not as dense. So it's actually got strength in it because of the way the wood grows. So, and this is the same with our bones. We can have high density bones, but they can be brittle and they can be weak. So they're more likely to break than someone else who might have low density bones, but they're actually strong bones and then they're not brittle. Hoping I'm making sense here. So we've got to be looking at, it's not just about the density. We've got to be looking at what else is going on. But focusing just on that bone density, saying, okay, well, I've got strong bone density means I'm not going to get a fracture. That's kind of a false sense of security. Now, I did mention DEXA before, and this is how generally bone density is measured. And it's the WHO's basically so-called gold standard of measuring bone density, but unfortunately, it's not a perfect predictor. It depends on the machines. If you are getting DEXA scans done, try and always get them done on the same machine, because different machines calibrate differently. And you can have a scan done one time and your bones look okay, and then you can have a scan done on a different machine and your bones can look completely different. So always try to get them done on the same machine if you are going to get them done. But once again, we've also got to remember what these DEXA machines are doing, because they're looking at those T scores, and they're also looking at density as opposed to strength. So, you know, they give you a little bit of an indication, and over time you might see a shift and it might give you an idea that you need to be doing something. It's not really predicting the fact that whether or not you're going to have fractures or not in the future. And this is a second bone of contention. This is a second bit of argument between, you know, different areas. And you can go out there, there's lots of research out there. I've been doing a lot of research as to, you know, what's going on. And, you know, the pure medical will say, oh, bone density is it. We've just got to focus on bone density. If your bone density goes down, well, you're in trouble. You're higher risk of having fracture. You need to look after yourself. You need to take something for it. But then there's the other side of the coin. It says, oh, hang on a minute. It's not all about bone density. We've got to look at strength. We've got to look a little bit more holistically rather than and stop comparing the bones of a 60-year-old with the bones of a 30-year-old and saying there's something wrong with them. So this all comes down to really a world that tells us that our body's not right. You know, there's a reason why our bone density will be dropping. You know, it's not because the body did anything wrong. The body knows exactly what it needs to do. It will be dropping down because as we get older, our need for having those stronger bones, when we were younger, we've got to go back to where we came from that, you know, that the community, from the cavemen. The stronger bones, and men always have stronger bones and a higher density bones than women do. So they always do, because they were ones who are out there who are hunting. They needed that. You know, they needed to be able to run. They needed to have the strength to be able to climb. They needed to have all that. The same as they have more muscle than women. As we get older, the need to be able to do that is not there. So then that's when our bones basically start to break down and don't build up as much. And it doesn't mean that they're kind of crumbling into nothing. If they're crumbling into nothing, then we have to look a little bit deeper as to what is going on, because that is not the normal way of bone health as you age, and there can be other things that are playing a role there. So I'm just talking at the moment about women who are relatively healthy, who don't have other things going on. The parathyroid might be playing a little bit of role and I know that there's people that just have crumbling bones. That is a different thing. I'm not talking about that at the moment. I'm talking about women that generally don't have any other major health issues, that their parathyroid's working properly, their thyroid's working okay, and there's no other obvious reason for why there's this issue with the bones. And then when it comes to the menopause, we put menopause on top of that. And, you know, this also brings up a few more arguments, discussions, bones of contention, see what I get. As we come through the menopause transition and we do start to lose estrogen, there can actually be an accelerated bone loss. But quite often that is only a short period. It's only for about 5 years around that end stage of the last period and coming into postmenopausal. Can be up to 5 years that density levels can drop, but then it just settles itself down. Now, we don't really know why this happens, but there's got to be a reason. But it's in that, but once again, just because bone density is coming down, so long as we've got bone strength, then we don't have as much an issue. So in that time, that 5 years or so postmenopause, women can lose up to 20% of their bone density. So they can lose up to. It doesn't mean everyone's going to lose 20%. We've got to be very careful about some of the wording that's used in some of these studies and some of, you know, what is being put out there. You know, you can lose up to 20%, which can lead to an increased risk of fractures, especially hips, around the joints. So your spine, your hips, your waist, and things like that. So wrists also can, you know, because of your fall, you break. But it can lead to an increased risk of fractures. There are so many things you can do to actually reduce that risk. So, yes, women, as they're postmenopausal, do have an increased risk of fractures, but only if their bones are weak and the bone density does not measure the strength. And also only if they don't have a strong balance and they're falling over, because this is the other thing we've got to look at. You know, when you the risk of fractures increases when your balance, when you're out of balance. So it's really important that you're actually moving and that you're practicing balance all of the time and keeping that balance there, because balance plays a massive role in reducing your risk of fractures. Can you get yourself up off the floor? You know, there I know I've been there, because when I had issues with my hip, I couldn't get up off the floor. My balance was out. But I've had to really strengthen my balance. And once I had my hip operations, that's the main, one of the main things I had to do was really strengthen my balance. And particularly as I go out and I walk and I climb over rocks and things like that, I had to have my balance. So that means I've got to have a strong core, got to have strong glutes, got to have strong muscles in my legs. So we've got to look at everything. It's got to be a holistic picture. And there's so many different things that play a role when it comes to keeping strong bones. The food that you eat, you know, I know that a lot of, because when I talk to women, quite often one of the things for some women, I do recommend that they drop out dairy, because dairy is inflammatory for some women and it causes lots of issues. And then people say, well, what, how am I going to get my calcium? There is so many different ways to get calcium that isn't getting it from dairy. Yes, you can get it from dairy, but if you're having low-fat dairy, without the fat in it, very, very hard for it to be absorbed. So really, you're probably not getting as much calcium as you think. You know, and we see these marketing things, oh, high levels of calcium. But is it a calcium that can be absorbed or not? Because low-fat milks and low-fat dairy without the fat is not absorbing the calcium. You have as much calcium as you like in the product, but without the fat, it doesn't get absorbed into your body. We need to be getting vitamin D as well. So vitamin D helps to absorb the calcium as well. But you can get calcium from leafy greens. You can get calcium from nuts and seeds. There are so many different ways that you can be getting calcium in your diet that isn't dairy. But, you know, it depends on whether or not you can take dairy. But most women that I work with, dairy is very inflammatory for them and causes issues. So we've got to look at the food that you're eating. And if you're eating a whole food that's full of lots of different vegetables and nuts and seeds, then more than likely you're getting more than enough calcium. As I said, you also need to be getting vitamin D. So vitamin D, easiest place to get vitamin D is from the sun. But it does depend on where you live and at the time of year that it is. So many women that I work with actually have low vitamin D levels, and we need to supplement that. And that's because they're not getting out in the sun. So there's been this big fear about the sun over the last, you know, 20, 30 years. They're wearing sunscreen too much, because sunscreen will block the absorption of vitamin D, or they're not living in the right place. So if you, in Australia, if you live any further south than Newcastle level, I'm not sure where that is over in the Western Australia or in New Zealand, but if you kind of, which is kind of round about the middle of Australia, like that middle line, if you live any lower than that, in winter time, you won't be getting enough vitamin D because of the angle of the sun. Because we, Australia, sit right at the bottom of the world, and the angle of the sun in winter time means people that are living in those lower states, and that'll be the same in New Zealand, people that are living in those lower states will not be getting enough vitamin D. So if you're not, your vitamin D levels aren't nice and strong during the summer months, then it is important that you supplement vitamin D. Now, vitamin D, if your levels are really low, it takes a long time to get the levels back up again. And I don't like to talk dosages or anything like that on podcasts, because it really does depend on where you are. But I would say, at a minimum, if your levels are low, that you need to be taking 4,000 IUs, which is generally 4 capsules a day. They come in 1,000. Normally, they come in 1,000 capsules, but you need to be starting at 4,000 a day. So 4 capsules a day, and it's still going to take a few months to get those levels back up. It does take quite some time, But in summertime, you can do that very, very quickly and very easily, get those levels up by being out in the sun for about 10 minutes a day. Not the really early morning, but kind of mid-morning, not getting burnt, just getting that slight color on your skin for about 10 minutes. That's it. Do that as much as possible on your skin. So your arms, your legs, you know, as much of your body as possible, then you'll be bringing that vitamin D in. So the other thing we've got to be looking at is exercise. Now, weight-bearing exercise is really, really important. Now, one of the benefits of being a bigger woman that has a lot more weight is that you're automatically getting your weight-bearing exercise, because just moving around is actually weight on your bones. And it's women who are very slim and slight and don't weigh a lot who are at higher risk of issues with their bones, particularly as they get older. So because they don't have enough weight, so they need to be finding ways to put that weight into the bones, because we've got to get the weight into the bones, because that's what makes bones stronger. The weight makes bones stronger, because when we kind of put the weight on the bone, it becomes stronger. It also, the muscles as well. So it's important that we're doing right type of exercise so that we've got strong muscles, and particularly muscles that support the joints and the bones. Because when we've got strong muscles, then the muscles will actually take some of the load off the bones. And particularly for people who've got the lower density or the weaker bones, we need the muscles then to be doing their work, so then there's less pressure on the bones. And as the muscles get stronger, they actually strengthen the bone as well, so that the bone gets stronger. So remember, once again, we're talking about bone strength as opposed to bone density. So we want to have strong bones. When we've got strong bones, then falling isn't necessarily going to automatically mean you're going to break. Now, you might still break something. You know, you have a big fall and you put your arm out and and it snaps, you break your wrist, you break your arm and things like that. That can still happen, but it will also repair. And when you're eating well and moving and looking after yourself, you will be making sure that you're getting the right nutrients to repair those bones. The other thing we need to look at, just be aware of too, particularly when it comes to food, is alkaline versus acidity. When your body is quite acidic, now acidic, I'm not talking about acidic food. So things like lemon and citruses, they are acidic foods, but when they're in the body, they're not, they're alkaline, and the food doesn't change. It's to do with the measure of the pH levels. And I'm not going to go into that too much, but when I'm talking about acidic foods, I'm talking more about the high sugary foods. I'm talking about processed foods and all of that. And that puts your body into an acidic state. And when your body is in an acidic state, what will happen is, because the body needs to maintain a certain pH level, and if the body becomes too acidic when you're eating these foods that cause inflammation in your body, that cause acidity within your body, then what happens is the body needs to balance that pH up. So calcium is a fantastic buffer. So what happens is the body basically releases calcium from the bones to buffer the acidity in the body to make you more alkaline, because if you become too acidic, you get sick, very sick, and die. So there's a very, very narrow pH level that the body needs to maintain health. So if you're eating a diet that is high in sugars, processed foods that put your body into an acidic and highly inflammatory state, then the body naturally, to protect itself, is just going to release calcium, any calcium from the bones that it's got, and to buffer your blood. And then if you're not eating calcium because you don't have a very healthy diet, that's where now we're in a calcium deficiency. And so the bones now become less dense. They also become less strong. Also, if you smoke, smoking can also impact your bone density and your bone strength. Smoking stops the circulation of oxygen, of blood to the body, to the brain, or part of your bodies. And I mean, obviously it's also full of toxins and things like that, but it does actually slow down the regrowth of bone cells. It slows down the regrowth of other cells as well. So if you're a smoker, it is important, you know, and I would hope in this day that, you know, people know about the issues around smoking, but there are still people that are smoking. And we could probably put vaping, if you're vaping as well. I know that's kind of become, for younger people, it seems to have become the new smoking is vaping, but if it's got nicotine in it, it's got the same issues. So if you're smoking, that's also going to impact your bone health. Now, of course, there are medications that you can take, but they have side effects. And it's really important that we look at, you know, if you're going to take a medication, what are the side effects of them? Also, if you're going to take a calcium, so many people say, okay, well, I'm just going to take calcium supplements. We need to be careful about them as well, because some of the calcium supplements are not very good quality. Some of them are a form that basically they're just like calcium bicarbonate is just like chalk. And you don't want chalky bones. We want better quality calcium. So sometimes that means that you need to pay more for a good quality calcium supplement. And generally those calciums will be with other minerals as well. And if you can get something that's like a multi-mineral that's got calcium, magnesium and vitamin K and zinc and vitamin D, really great. So you can get specific bone supplements that have got everything in it, not just calcium, because it's important that calcium and magnesium stay in balance with each other, because if they go out of balance, that can cause more issues. You don't want to be taking super high levels of calcium, because that can actually cause heart conditions as well. So we've got to be very careful that we're not just kind of going, okay, I've got a problem with my bones, and then just super dosing on calcium and nothing else and taking high doses, because that causes more imbalances, because now what we've got is we've got too much calcium floating around, and that can cause an issue as well, because the bone can't take that up. And particularly if it's not with vitamin D and vitamin K, it's not being absorbed. We've just got this calcium running around the body, and that can cause calcifications. It causes issues with your circulatory system. It can cause issues with your heart. So we've got to be very careful about that. So please make sure that you don't just kind of go and take a calcium supplement. If you're going to take calcium, speak to a health provider that actually understands the right type of calcium for you. Now, let's just have a little bit. I just want to have a bit of a chat around HRT, because HRT, particularly for women as they're coming through menopause, it's kind of another bone of contention around HRT. There's some people who say that every woman needs to be on HRT if they don't want to have osteoporosis. There's other people who say, no, HRT basically just reduces your risk. So, and there's a few different studies around this that, you know, and some show different things, but really across the board, basically what it's saying is that it decreases the risk of getting osteoporosis. So it doesn't necessarily prevent osteoporosis. It decreases the risk. And this is what we should, and there's many things that can decrease the risk. Food decreases the risk. Movement, everything I've just spoken about decreases your risk. And your risk factors really depend on your genetics, your lifestyle, what your bone density scan says, you know, what you're doing. So it depends on how many risk factors you have as to how much you need to reduce that risk. And HRT, there is no conclusive evidence that says that it will prevent osteoporosis. But we do know that it minimizes the risk, along with many other things. So, you know, it's going to take a lot more long-term studies to actually say definitively that HRT will prevent osteoporosis. We do know that it helps to maintain bone density, but I've just said it's not all about bone density. It's also about bone strength and the quality of the bone. So this is where, you know, we've got people who are going, and this is so much across the board in social media. Every woman should be on HRT. If not, you're going to get osteoporosis. You're going to break your leg and you're not going to be able to move. It's like there's a lot of fear around it. And then women going, but I can't be on HRT because there's a risk because of cancer and blood clots and things like that. And it's like, well, and those women are feeling like, okay, I'm going to end up with osteoporosis. Not so. I just wish this fear mongering would stop, because There are so many things that you can do. Yes, if you want to take HRT because you've got other symptoms, that's your choice. But taking HRT merely as a preventative for osteoporosis, there are risks to taking HRT. And even if it's bioidentical, there are risks. And you've got to look at what are your risks of getting osteoporosis? What are your risks associated with HRT? That then does become a decision for you. But there are so many different things that you can be doing apart from taking HRT. If that's the only reason why you're taking it, if you've got other symptoms and you need to be managing other things that are going on, well, that's fine. But if you're only taking it to prevent osteoporosis, then I'm going to say that's not the best reason for taking it, because there are so many other things you can do that are lower risk. Making sure that you're eating foods that are high in calcium, vitamin K, getting your vitamin D levels up. So getting out in the sun, moving your body, you know, getting the strength into your body, reducing the toxins that can cause your body to break down. There's so many things you can do that doesn't require you to take on the risk of HRT. So just a real quick summary, what you can do to make sure that your bone stays strong, making sure you're getting enough calcium. And you get that through dairy, that through leafy greens, you get there through nuts and seeds. Vitamin D, once again, you get that from the sun. You can supplement that. You can also get vitamin D in foods as well, eggs and things like that. So you need vitamin D to help to absorb the calcium. We also need to be looking at vitamin K, in specifically K2, because we need that for strong bones as well. And you will get that in all your leafy greens, plant foods as well. And also we've actually seen that soy isoflavane. So having soybean products, and I'm not talking about that TVP stuff. I'm talking about soybeans, tempeh, miso. That actually can actually help to increase your bone density as well. So there's research around that as well. Engaging in the weight-bearing exercise. So making sure that you're moving your body in a way that puts the stress on the bone, because when you put the stress on the bones, you actually make stronger bones. So things like walking, jogging, weightlifting. Swimming isn't going to cut it, I'm afraid, but because you need to be putting that weight onto your bones, and that's going to keep healthier bones. And also doing muscle building. So doing muscle building exercises are going to help to support those bones as well. So we become stronger in the muscles, we become stronger in the bones. If you're a smoker, quit smoking across the board. I mean, I'm not going to go into that anymore. I think everyone knows the dangers and the side effects of smoking. Also, alcohol. Now, this is another thing that I recommend that all women who are going through the menopause that really bring down your alcohol or eliminate alcohol altogether, because alcohol can interfere with the body's ability to absorb calcium. So, you know, if your body needs more calcium, alcohol is going to block that. So we need to be very, very careful on alcohol intake. And it is really all about living a really, really healthy life. And when you can do that, then you're going to have strong bones. You know, yes, you can be getting, if you want to get bone density tests done, you can do that. It is recommended for women over the age of 65, or if you've got high risk factors for osteoporosis. But if you are getting DEXA scans done, please make sure that you get it done with the same machine each time, so you're actually getting a consistent reading. When you have different machines, your readings could be out. Also know that DEXA scans are not a predictor of your risk of fracture. They're really just they're just telling you about the bone density, but we're looking for bone strength. So having really strong bones will keep you healthy, will minimize your risk of fracture, and will keep you living a long, healthy life. Hopefully that information has been useful for you. If you've got any further questions about this, please pop over into the Menopause Conversations Facebook group and ask me, and I'll see if I can answer you. As I said, there's been, you know, I've been kind of wanting to give you both sides of the story, but I do really think that we need to be starting to, one, I want to bring down the fear around osteoporosis and kind of give you a little bit of the background around some of these terms and what's going on. Because really, if you want to maintain those healthy bones, it is about simply living well, eating well, moving your body, getting rid of the toxins in your body. And not only will you have healthy bones, you will have a healthy heart, you will have a healthy life, and you will live a long, long life. So that's it from me this week. Please feel free to share this podcast with your friends and family. If anyone is interested in learning a little bit more about menopause, the things that you can do to reduce your symptoms, to thrive in menopause, please share this podcast with them. And if you wish, if you're listening to me on Apple Podcasts, please leave me a rating and review. It just means other women can find the podcast when those rating and reviews come up, because Apple will show them to more people. If you're not listening on Apple, some other platforms do give you the opportunity to leave a rating and review. If not, just come over to the Facebook group, Menopause Conversations, and see me over there and let me know what you thought. That's it from me. Bye for now. Just before I go, I just want to remind you that the Menopause Demystified, Unraveling Hormonal Changes, Minimizing Symptoms, and Embracing a Vibrant Life webinar is coming up very, very shortly on June 26th and 27th. It's the same webinar, just two dates at 7 p.m. I will be running this webinar exclusively for women who are over the age of 40 to give you the knowledge and some tips to navigate your menopause transition with ease and with confidence. You'll get a deeper understanding of what is happening with your hormones and how the hormonal changes are impacting your health and the way that you feel. You'll also get some strategies on how you can reduce some of those symptoms and bring your hormones back into balance naturally. So to register for the webinar, the link is angelacouncil.com/menopause_webinar. Go over there, make sure you register. The call will be recorded. So long as you've registered, you will be sent a recording. So even if you can't be live on the call, register and I will send you a recording once it is all over. So looking forward to seeing you very, very soon on the webinar where I can share all this information with you. I'll be back next week with another episode of Menopause Conversations podcast. Bye for now.